From the Mills Fleet Farm Studios, WTDX Lakeville, WRXP Cambridge, WGBZ Eden Prairie, a Cumulus station. We're live.
Live!
From the Twin Cities with the Bob Sansevier Show. Great guests, interviews, and over 30 years of sports insight.
I'm pretty good at my job.
Here's the host of the show, Bob Sansevier.
Wiggins.
Ooh, in your face.
That was impressive.
Andrew Wiggins, strong take for Wiggins. Fouled on his way to the rack, and how about that throwdown?
29th time this season, the Wolves have given up 10 or more a game. They've won only four such games.
Andrew Wiggins, the trifecta. Third impressive throwdown of the night.
You know, you listen to that, you think maybe your Timberwolves had one hell of a night.
Yeah, I figured we should show a little love to at least somebody on that team.
You got a team here. I think it's safe to say that they're not going to be playing for the NBA title this year. Yesterday, it was just another loss, 104-84. Lose to Utah, another bad team, not as bad as your Timberwolves. But you know what? Zach LaVine had the 21 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. Of all the things that have happened this year, that might be the most encouraging thing, that he is getting time and he's getting a chance to put up numbers. And, he and Wiggins are going to be, I think as time goes on, they're going to be two key players for this club. And he's playing because Ricky's still got this. Everybody's banged up. Pekovic is done for the year. Flip said it's just no fun. We have a special guest. Chad Morin's with us. He was with us last year when Superstar Mike Morris and I and Ben did the show together. And we talked to him last week, asked him to come in and join us. Now, this guy, we are going to talk a little fantasy. No, it's not fantasy baseball. It's rotisserie baseball. Chad is, he fashions himself an expert, played in 8 leagues last year, won 5 of them, claims 4 of the 8 were very competitive and they all knew what they were doing, won 3 of those 4. And you do mixed and do AL and NL or just mixed?
Just mixed right now.
8 mixed? You couldn't find a AL or NL?
There's a lot more research that needs to be done when you play with AL and NL. So I try.
Oh, you
like
the superficial stuff?
No, I just like to keep it. I like watching all the games. So if you just play with AL, then you're stuck with just watching American League teams.
Well, but then you could play. Do you play a DH or an extra player?
I do.
In all of them?
A couple leagues we have the NA where you can put a non-activated player on your roster.
Yep.
So that's kind of fun too.
All right, now give me the greatest hitting sleeper in both leagues right now. Who is that guy for you?
For me, I would, Buxton's going to be, but he's not coming up.
You need a guy that people are drafting.
Right now?
Yeah, people are drafting probably this week, much like with, football draft before the season starts.
Well, for the...
A lot of people have him already on their, they drafted him for their minor league system.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we do it.
Two for the National League that I have on my roster would be Michael Taylor, the outfielder for the Nationals.
The one that used to be with the Oakland A's.
Is
that the same
so.
Taylor?
Yep.
The one that did nothing when I had him all those years.
He's
going to
be taking
leagues.
Span's place for the month of April, and he's already hit 4 home runs this preseason.
Spring training.
Yeah, it's spring training numbers, I agree. But the other sleeper would be Michael Morris for the Marlins. I mean, he's hitting cleanup. I mean, he's going way late in the draft.
Former Seattle player.
Yes. Former Giants player.
Giants, not Morris. I'm sorry.
Michael Morris.
Okay. I got sucked in last year by Billy Burns, who tore it up on the base paths. He's doing it again this year, hitting. Batting over 400, but they're just going to wind up sending him down. There's so many guys like that. They have the great, great spring training, and then when it really comes, it becomes the real season, they don't even play the darn guys. So
Steven Voigt, he has a 3-position player for Oakland. He catcher, first base, outfield. He's kind of a deep sleeper. Steve Pierce for Baltimore. He's having a great spring also, and his numbers last year were still outstanding. He's batting probably 5th or 6th in the lineup.
So he's got ribby chances.
Oh, for sure.
Now, let me ask you this. On the Twins, how many guys are on the Twins? Okay, let me rephrase it. Who in their batting order would you not touch or not want to have even in the mixed league? You're not going to have many, but you're AL only.
AL only?
Who would you not go near? Danny Santana you're going to want.
Right.
Dozier you're going to want.
Dozier had a great season last year. I love him, but 1 year isn't really.
But you're still going to want him. It's not a guy you're going to pass on.
Yeah, they sent Hicks down.
You don't want him.
I mean, I mean, Hunter, you're going to want. I mean, he's...
Well, okay, you just skipped over one. What about Joe Mauer? I mean, I don't know that you want him, not in a mixed league.
He hits for average. He hits a lot of doubles.
He has in the past.
But he doesn't hit a lot of homers, and he plays first base. I mean, you want your first baseman to hit 25, 30 homers.
Well, he will be drafted by someone, certainly in AL-only teams. But when you're in a mixed league, and if you don't have a bench, I don't know that he's getting drafted. Because he qualifies now at first base, right?
He was dropped in two leagues that I'm in, so in the mixed leagues. In the AL, I would take a flyer on him.
But not, yeah.
I mean, Twins, Target Field is a tough place to hit.
So who else? Trevor Plouffe, would you touch him?
No, I wouldn't touch him.
Not in a mixed.
Not in a mixed. AL, maybe.
AL, you'll do it, yeah.
Maybe.
But you don't want to spend a lot. Now, are you, this is a key question, is it you draft or auction?
Both.
What do you prefer?
I prefer auction.
Yeah, that's the way to go.
You know, because then you can actually go after the players you want if you're stuck with a snake draft.
Yeah,
I mean, if you have the 10th pick, I mean, you get to pick every 20 picks, 22 picks. It's like, that's too risky.
Now, I'm not going to even ask you this question of, what kind of money you can make because it's, you're not supposed to be doing that. But I do want to mention, there's a guy, either one of you hear about this, Hellboy or Chad, Chad Morin, our guest here, talking some rotisserie baseball with him. But a guy named Derek Stevens, he went to the sports book at the Golden Nugget Hotel and Casino. And he happens, actually, it's located between two properties he owns out in Vegas. So he's got some dough, right? He went in and asked the sportsbook director, a guy named Tony Miller. And this is a guy that we had on when Superstar Mike Morris and I were there 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago in November, that he wanted to make a bet on Michigan State to win it all and to make sure that if he did win, he'd want to win $1 million. So they had to clear this. You just don't plunk down a bet like that. He put down 50 grand at 50 to 1. Excuse me, 20 grand at 50 to 1. And they win their next two games. He's paying off. He's getting $1 million. Now, the thing about that is, that sounds great, but if you could plunk down 20 grand, it means you got a lot of disposable income. So I'm sure that $1 million to him, it wouldn't be the first time he cashed $1 million paycheck. So that's not too bad at all. It's not too bad at all. Never put that kind of money down. I think the most I've ever bet on anything back in the days when I actually bet was $20 on a either in roulette or in blackjack. Because I learned at a very early age, and I think I've mentioned this before, Atlantic City just got its casinos when I was working at the Atlantic City Press, Resorts International. And I was 19 or 20 when I was working there. So to me, $20 was like 20% of my income, or almost. I mean, I was making maybe netting not even 150 a week, so that was a lot of money to me. And then I walked out once and I was so depressed that I had lost $20 that it taught me a great lesson early that betting is good for a lot of people. It wasn't so good for me. So I've stayed away from it. What about you, Hellboy? Big time better?
I don't really bet too much, but when I do, I win.
When you do, you win.
Yeah, most of the time.
Okay. What bet you want to do this weekend?
This weekend?
On the Final Four. You taking Kentucky?
I picked them to win.
How many points are you giving me?
Still be taking.
Are you giving me? I got Duke. We'll assume we'll go right to the final.
How many points?
How many points are you going to give me?
Four.
Four? That's it?
Yeah.
I need more than four.
All right.
Kentucky's a juggernaut.
Wisconsin's really good, too.
Well, we're only betting if they happen to both meet.
Oh, right. Well.
We're betting Kentucky versus Duke in the final.
We can't bet that yet.
We're going to, though. That's the bet. We're going to go to the final and bet. Okay, you take that half of the bracket. I'll take the other half.
As I say, the winner comes out of Kentucky, Wisconsin.
Well, that's what you're saying.
I like the way he thinks.
He thinks that way, but give me a number. Better than four.
Better than four?
We don't even know what the line will be if they happen to
meet. Is five better?
I think
five
six
and a half.
Is better.
Five and a half.
I'll take the 5.5, and we'll do it for... We're 105 the ticket for $1.05.
Oh,
that's
wow.
The bet. Well, you can't go too high.
I'm going to move some money around.
Well, you might have to. It took me months to collect enough pennies to give to Ben for our 1,300 penny bet. I finally got to the bank. And you know what? I was too lazy to crack them open. I wound up just getting them in a bag and throwing them on his desk in the, still in the wrappers. That's a lot of freaking pennies. Because you're talking about 26 rolls of them. I think they only put 50 in a roll. So, but this one we could pay off with a crisp dollar and 5 cents. However you want to pay it off, as long as it adds up to $1.05. 105 the ticket, 105 is the bet. Are we in agreement?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Chad, what do you think? Who do you like in that one, me or him? You like him, obviously.
Yeah.
But I'm getting the 5.5.
Yeah, the Kentucky-Wisconsin series, or the game, there's just too much big in that game. So, I mean, Duke has a chance if they can shoot well, you know, if it comes down to that. But that's why Wisconsin has a chance against Kentucky. They're just as big.
Well, I think Kentucky will come out of that. We talked to Kelly in Vegas, at Kelly in Vegas on Twitter the other day, and I happen to agree with her. I think that Kentucky had basically a massacre hangover after what they did to West Virginia. They had 39 points. That was unbelievable. You know what? We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, you're going to be hearing from former governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura. He's always got something to say. We talk also today to Tim Lammers, syndicated movie journalist. CJ Nitkowski from CBS Sports Radio. Talk baseball with him. Today we have Marsh Hallberg, Jim Suhan from the Star Tribune and SuhanUnfiltered.com, and our guy from way out west talking hockey with Jack Jablonski. Chad Morin has joined us to talk some baseball with him, some rotisserie baseball. That's coming up for a lot of people. We always have Hellboy as usual. We'll take a quick break and come back with the former governor of Minnesota, Jesse Ventura.
The Bob Sansevier Show, only on Sports Radio 105 The Ticket.
We're pleased to be joined by former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, and anyone who knows the governor, he has opinions on many things, and one of them also includes what's going on with the NCAA March Madness and how players are treated. Governor, what you have a little issue with them not being paid, it sounds like.
Well, you know, I live down here in the wintertime now. I live 900 miles down in Mexico doing my off-the-grid show, and I happened to catch on the Internet John Oliver. Have you ever seen him on HBO?
Yes, I'm familiar with him.
Well, I think he's the new John Stewart to me, and he went on a rampage and came to light that, you know, that they make $1 billion. $1 billion more than the Super Bowl and the NFL playoffs. They make $1 billion, and these kids don't get paid anything. Where does that money go? They're not even covered. If they get hurt and they pull their knee out or rip an Achilles and never play basketball again, they're not even covered by workman's comp because they're considered student athletes, not employees. They're making $1 billion for this entity out there. You know, I think it's high time these young men at age 18 and 19 and 20 earn some type of income for what they do. Most of them don't graduate. The good ones go to the NBA within a year or two, and the NBA works in conjunction. You can't go from the high school to the NBA now. Now you're telling me Kevin Garnett, Kobe Bryant, and LeBron James belong going to college? Absolutely not. They were ready for the NBA at 18 years of age. You can go, like Jermaine O'Neal put it the best, so you can go die in Iraq at 18, but you can't play in the NBA at 18? Point being, these are adults and they deserve rights and they shouldn't be. The only reason we're not concerned is because they're entertainment for us and a lot of gambling goes on, which is fun at work, isn't it? So who cares if these kids are exploited or not?
Well, do you do a bracket yourself?
Heck no. I purposely said I haven't done one in years, and I refuse to participate in it. Number one, I tried to legalize sports betting in Minnesota. I couldn't get one legislator to even carry the bill. It's all under the table, and it's illegal. Let's face it, people, as fun as it is, it's against the law.
I got news for you, Governor. It's not that much fun when you get your ass kicked in the first round.
It's a $3 billion a year industry. I tried to finance all the pro sports stadiums with sports betting. If the state of Minnesota acted like a bookie and collected 10%, that'd be $300 million a year. How quick could you pay the Vikings stadium off?
Yeah, and by the way, we're talking to former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. And by the way, every time I have to go to pay to renew my my license or my fees for my car, I think of Jesse Ventura for knocking those down. So thank you for that.
Well, I put them into a flat rate, what they ought to be. You're simply buying the license to drive a vehicle on the street. It should have no bearing on the cost of the vehicle. That's a sales tax that you paid when you purchased the vehicle. It should be a flat rate. Motorcycles are. Whether you drive a Honda 50 or a big Harley Davidson, it's a flat rate. I forget how much it is, 15, 18 bucks, whatever yeah. it is. And that's the way it should be for cars. But you notice as soon as I left, they got rid of that, didn't they?
Well, it's still some of them have stayed down because I used to pay. Well, we all paid in the hundreds. Now it's at least reasonable based on the age of the car. That helps a bit. Now, I also wanted to go back to the point you were making about also. I've known you as Jesse. I've known you as Governor. What do you prefer when people talk to you? Do you want to be called Governor or Jesse? You once told me, call me Governor. That's when you were still Governor.
Well, you know, it kind of works like this. It's up to the person that you're talking to, really, because the way it works is you're always the governor. You're just not the current one. The yep. same as you're always the president. You know, if Bill Clinton shows up, you'd refer to him as Mr. President, even though he's not the president anymore. You carry the title. And technically, you can put it on your gravestone. So when I die, if I have a gravestone somewhere, I can put governor on it.
Well, then we'll stick with that. And as a matter of fact, by the way, I carried Orono for you because I was elected the same night you were. Nobody still calls me council member, but I was on the Orono City Council for 20 years or for 8 years, and the same year we got elected the same time. So that's
well, you know, I don't know if council member rises to that height. You know, they have a
well, thanks a lot
achievement or whatever, senator, governor, congressman, or president or whatever. And you know, but it's good that you experienced that. I was Brooklyn Park mayor.
I know.
That's government at its grassroots level. That's truly seeing government in action because you got to look the voters right in the eye.
Yep. And, Governor, let me point out as you're dogging council members a little bit, I got reelected. Now, let me ask you this.
I've never sought reelection.
I know you didn't. I was just giving you some crap. You have a sense of humor.
Even as mayor, I only do one term because I believe one of the great problems we have today is career politicians. And so I believe that our country wasn't designed to have you go there and make it a career. You should go there and serve, and when you're done serving, go back to what you used to do or go on to a new life like I did. And so I do it by example. You know, I do one term, and that's what I do. I would consider, too, there's nothing, because everyone should be able to serve as long as the president's allowed to. And but we limit the president to two terms, so why wouldn't we limit all these other guys? And the way you can do it without bringing in term limits, just take away retirement.
That's a good way to look at it. Now, by the way, you haven't...
Why should you get retired? Do you know I get nothing for being the governor of the state of Minnesota?
You don't... There's no pension for being governor?
No. Arnie Carlson took it, and then him and the legislature took it away from everybody after him, which was me, Pawlenty, and Dayton. So Pawlenty, me, and Dayton will get nothing, and Arnie Carlson gets a full governor's pension. See, if Arnie believes the governor shouldn't get a retirement, then he shouldn't have taken it. It's very hypocritical of him.
I had no idea. I figured that you guys, you, Pawlenty, well, and the sitting governor, obviously, Dayton, would be taken care of by the state.
Oh, no, not at all. The only thing I was allowed to participate in was the regular state employee retirement thing, and that works best 4 out of 5 years, and so I only did 4 years. It forces you to go for re-election. I didn't choose to do that, so I'm null and void on that, too, because I don't have 5 years. I've only got 4.
Well, you let me ask you this. How much time are you spending in Minnesota now, or is most of it or all of it in Mexico?
Well, I like to tell you Minnesotans this. I love Minnesota, but I'm one of the few born and raised there. I don't know how to skate. I was a competitive swimmer. I spent all winter in a pool. So I like to say that I'm there with the Leaves. When the Leaves are in Minnesota, I'm in Minnesota. When the Leaves go, I go.
Now, do you still? I'm sure you're still watching the Vikings from afar, though, when you're not here.
Well, I don't watch them necessarily, but I get them on satellite radio occasionally. But I live down here with no television. I don't watch television down here.
Well, so do you, what do you, you're obviously doing something to, I'd be parked in front of the TV on most days. What are you doing to pass the time doing? I know you have a lot of other extracurricular things.
I have things that can happen that are all free, like surfing and like going into the desert and like, if riding ATVs up and down sand dunes and scuba diving and anything I desire to do. But I live by really one code down here. I wake up every morning with nothing to do, and when I go to bed that night, I'm half done.
We're talking to former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura. Now, Governor, if there's four major sports, football, basketball, baseball, and hockey, if you could be the commissioner of any one of those sports, which one would you want to be commissioner of?
Oh, I don't know. They all got their own separate headaches, I guess. I don't know. You know, football has a lot to deal with the head injuries and things of that nature that are going on in that business. You know, they've all got their things. I really don't know which one I'd rather be commissioner of. I think I'd rather be Vince McMahon and just run the WWE.
That's not a bad way to go. Now, Brock Lesnar went back to the WWE. Do you follow it still? Are you? Do you have any affiliation at all?
No, none whatsoever. In fact, I had to be told which WrestleMania. I think they said it's 31.
Yeah, it is. It's 31.
I don't follow it at all. My days of that type of that being in my life have long ago left. I left in 1990. I never looked back. So believe it or not, it's been 25 years since I've left that business. So other people know way more about it than I do now.
Now, if it was around when you were wrestling, would you have given MMA a shot?
Would I? No, not at all. I was a performer. I wouldn't have done MMA at all. I'll tell you a funny story. When I went through Navy SEAL training, one day one of the trainees asked the instructor. He said, "Instructor, when do we get trained in hand-to-hand combat?" You know what the instructor said back to him?
What's that?
He said, with a Stoner machine gun, no one should ever get that close.
That's a good point.
Well, you know, we dealt in my, you know, in what I dealt with, getting out of high school and going into basic underwater demolition SEAL training, you dealt with weapons. You didn't deal necessarily. I mean, there were guys trained in hand-to-hand close-quarter combat like that, but the instructor was correct. We had the Stoner machine gun, and it put out 1,000 rounds a minute.
Now, let me ask, people, ever since it came out, I've heard the question, I wonder if, so I'll ask you, because I'm wondering too, everyone knows about the, with Chris Kyle, did you see American Sniper?
No.
No interest at all, or it's not something that, you think you'll ever see it?
To me, Chris Kyle's not a hero, and I'll tell you why. A hero has to have honor, and a liar has no honor. And Chris Kyle told a complete fabricated lie about me. He wrote it in his book. It catapulted his book to number one. Unfortunately, he died then after my lawsuit had been filed. So it then transferred to his estate. We completely proved in court that it never occurred. Chris Kyle had a lying problem. I've been reading a lot, and I've read about Richard Helms. He headed the CIA back in the 60s and 70s. The particular book I read said he was a sociopath, and I've learned from doctors that you can't treat a sociopath. And the way he was a sociopath was, Helms, they said, was that he could lie, and he didn't care who he hurt with his lies, and he had no conscience with his lies. Well, I sat and thought about Chris Kyle and felt that's the same as Chris Kyle. He lies and then has no conscience about his lying. Because I didn't even know the guy. If I did meet him, I met him briefly for 10, 20, 30 seconds maybe at a SEAL function because I'd meet 50 or 80 guys there, you know. It never occurred, and that's why I thought, you know, they offered me money to disappear and I wouldn't take it. I said, this isn't about money. This is clearing my reputation. We're going to court. Like when Bill O'Reilly got accused of that stuff by Mother Jones, why doesn't he go to court and prove it? If he was defamed, go to court. People have to go under oath then. That's what I did. I went to court to prove this was a lie, and we did.
Does it ever? One last thing about it, because a lot of people give you heat after going after a widow. How do you respond to that? Does that, because, I mean, you haven't had a great reputation.
Her name is, she chose to become the executor of the estate, and it was covered by an insurance company. She didn't have to pay one penny. It was Jesse Ventura versus a big insurance company, and it still is.
So when she says that it's come out of her pocket, that's not accurate?
Well, she's made $6 million off the book so far. How much is she going to make off the movie?
No, I don't have an answer to that.
I haven't been paid a cent. It's in the Court of Appeals right now. How about this? It's cost me 4 years of my life, nearly $750,000 of my money to fight this thing. Nobody paid my freight. I didn't have an insurance company paying my lawsuit. She did.
When's the Jesse Ventura movie coming out?
Hopefully never.
It'd be a hell of a story, wouldn't it?
Well, I don't know if it would or not, but I hope there's not one. I don't know who could play me other than me, and I don't want to do it.
Well, Governor, thanks a lot. Former Minnesota Governor Jesse Ventura, thanks for taking the time with us.
Okay, I appreciate it very much. Look forward to doing it again.
We'll be right back with Tim Lammers, syndicated movie journalist. Talk to him about some of Jesse's movies. Be right back. We are joined by Tim Lammers, syndicated movie journalist. Catch his reviews on Care 11 News at 11 on Fridays. Mondays, you can catch him on the Tom Bernard Show, Tom's digital podcast. Also, he's on KQ. He has the website, directconversations.com. And Tim, I had Jesse Ventura on with me
just
in the last segment.
Yeah.
Now, did you notice how pissy he got when I said I got reelected? Yeah, that long pause.
You know, he's quite a performer, isn't he still?
Yeah, but I think he was bothered because he wanted to make sure people knew I didn't run for reelection.
Yeah, boy. I tell you, Bob, I commend you for, you know, asking the Chris Kyle questions.
Well, I think
it had to be asked.
And now, I don't know, honestly, Tim, I'm not sure if he'd addressed it before, because I haven't seen anything or anyone ask him about whether he had seen the movie. And this was not an interview where I was going to ask questions that I thought were pertinent. This was not going to be me grilling Jesse Ventura.
Sure. No, I think you handled that line of questioning. The whole thing was great. I mean, but that particular line of questioning. And, you know, clearly he was willing to talk about it. I mean, he went on for a while about it, so.
Yeah, he was more willing to talk about that than I just thought. I thought we lost him when I had said something about, you know, because he was pointing out that being called governor is not the same as council member.
Oh.
You know, and you know what I said, well, dog a council member. At least one of us got reelected.
Yeah.
And it was just, hello?
Oh, man.
So, but Tim, now also, Chad Merrin, who he's been with us before, he's sitting in. We talked a little fantasy and or rotisserie baseball with him.
How you doing, Chad?
Doing very well. Thank you.
And what I wanted to ask you, Tim, is we just had Jesse Ventura, former governor of Minnesota, on. How many movies has he actually been in, and which one? The ones that I'm just thinking of the ones that stand out. I mean, it's not that many
Predator.
Stand out. Predator, and he also was on what was the other one where
The Running Man.
Running Man.
Captain Freedom.
Which
well,
I thought might have been his best role.
Yeah, I think so.
Mr. Freeze.
That line is an iconic line. Let's face it, I ain't got time to bleed.
Yeah.
In Predator, and I had actually caught the rerun of that on TV, I don't know, it was last weekend or something, and it was after they took him out. But there's no question, you know what, looking in retrospect, I think he's actually a better actor than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I don't know if that says
a lot. Well, Jesse has depth. Now, wasn't he a henchman for Mr. Freeze, Arnold Schwarzenegger, in one of the Batman movies?
He actually was, and I looked that up, a guard at Arkham Asylum at the end of
the movie. Oh, he was a guard, okay, I'm confusing it with something else then.
Yeah. I mean, he would have been good for that. I mean, I guess effectively he was like a henchman in The Running Man, which again, that was a good role for him, where he actually had the character had a conscience and refused to go on for Richard Dawson. Richard Dawson was the bad guy in that movie, and they digitized his face on another actor and took out Arnold's character. But, you know, of course, in the course of filming, it was those two together. But, yeah, it was, you know, I really like that movie. And if people really want to see what The Hunger Games was before The Hunger Games, it's The Running Man.
Yep. Now, the thing about, you know, about him in that movie, I thought that he should have figured out a way to keep that hairstyle. His hair looked good.
Yeah.
They gave him good hair.
Yeah, it was regular hair, wasn't it? It was just, parted to the side from what I can remember. And, of course, he always had the mustache in those early films like that. So, you know, I was thinking today, I don't know if you heard, but they halted production on Pirates of the Caribbean, Johnny Depp's fifth movie.
What?
You know, Jesse had that pirate look at one time. Maybe he could step in for Johnny Depp.
What well, that would be interesting. I'm trying to think, has he done any sports movies?
You know, not...
Running Man. Okay, Running Man, but
running,
that's not...
Yeah, I mean, it's a sport sport to the death. No, you know, it's kind of interesting when you run down his credits on IMDb, they have everything mixed together, so you get all these wrestling appearances. So he has a ton of credits. So actually fishing out what he did on the screen is kind of tough. But really, his first film was Predator, and then it was The Running Man, and then it, apparently Ricochet, which was a Denzel Washington movie. It must have been a small role. I don't even remember him in the picture, but he was in that as well. But as far as I know, I don't think he's been in any sports-related movies.
No, and you're right, though. There's been a lot of wrestling stuff. And Demolition Man, I don't remember. He was Cryocon, and... I don't remember if that was a big... That one is not one that stuck with me.
No, no. It probably was a small role. You know, and the other thing is, an interesting credit, and just because it's timely, because the series is coming back, he actually appeared in an X-Files episode as well. I don't remember seeing that one, but he played the Man in Black in the X-Files almost 20 years ago. So he was in that as well. I think he probably could have carved out a decent enough career in acting, you know, smaller parts like that if he wanted to. I mean, clearly he did the stuff with Schwarzenegger, but he probably could have done things apart from that too.
Well, I think what he did is he opened up himself up and he really showed his range, because in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the TV series, in 2014 he played the Finger.
The Finger, yes.
The voice of the Finger, whatever that would have been.
Didn't he have his own TV show, The Conspiracy Theory?
Oh, of course, yeah, he had that. What was that on? Was that True TV?
I don't know, some station that nobody watches.
Yeah, that didn't last. But Demolition Man, you're right. Now that was a Sylvester Stallone picture then, wasn't
it? You know, the whole thing about Jeff, I mean, I think people could be a lot more bemused with him if it hadn't been for the suing of the Chris Kyle's widow.
That's exactly right, Bob. That is a tough one. And, you know, he can say his side, and then you hear a completely different side from what he says. Who knows really what happened? But, yeah, I have to tell you, Bob, listening to you talk with him, it is interesting. He's an interesting guy. There's no question about that. So, you know, whether you agree with what he does or what he has to say, he certainly commands your attention when he speaks, that's for sure.
Well, I mean, it's to a point. I mean, somebody has sent me a tweet. Ventura's an egotistical jackass. Thank God you didn't have him on any longer than you did.
Yeah.
I think in bursts like that, it's fine. And right. I actually, you know, honestly, Tim, I am not in favor. I mean, what he did to go after a widow. I don't care what he says about the insurance company. That is, he should have just let it go. It was his choice not to. But whenever I've talked to Jesse, I've always had interesting conversations with him.
Yeah, well, yeah, clearly what he did, I guess you could, it was kind of like a moral thing. You know, it's just really bad form what he was doing. And yeah, maybe he can have a logical explanation for it. And believe me, there are times, too, where, you know, he'll appear on O'Reilly, who he did slam. Didn't you kind of catch that as a slam of O'Reilly? You just roll your eyes looking at him. But you're right. I think probably you can take him in doses. Mostly, I mean, I listened to him because you were talking with him. And like I said, I thought there were great questions. And I loved how you brought up Chris Kyle. But sometimes it seems like the host kind of just go with what he has to say and, you know, governor this and governor that. And I don't buy into it, but whatever.
No, and the reason actually, it wasn't, and I in retrospect, it wasn't as obvious, but the whole calling him governor was tweaking him, because at one point he was mad at me. I was talking to him at a Wolves game, and I kept calling him Jesse, and he goes, call me governor. This is when he was still governor, because he was still governor at the time, and he wanted to make sure I knew that he was governor. Well, of course I knew.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, and I should have made that clear. I didn't. And
well, obviously with former presidents, you refer to them as presidents always. But is it in etiquette to be calling a former governor of a state?
Yeah, I think it does happen, and I don't know why it's not an etiquette to call me council member.
Well,
he didn't think so, clearly.
Yes, council member, I've already adapted it into my vernacular.
Tim, that's why I love having you on.
You're kind of pushing me that way a little bit, so yeah. I thought I better go with it.
But he's a huge sports fan. Like I said, he went to the Wolves a lot. I would run into him every year, and he probably... I wasn't out there last year, but he's usually in town when they have the Champions Golf Tournament here. You know, he's at that a lot. You know, so he does get around, and he does. The whole Mexico thing, I guess I don't quite understand it. And the thing about him is, the best thing he has going for him is he's got a wonderful wife.
Yeah. I've never met her. I've met him once. Actually, it was a party that Schwarzenegger put on when he was doing Jingle All the Way here way back. I guess that was 96.
Yep.
So that was at the Mall of America, you know, shook his hand, and that's really the extent of my, you know, I just met him. That was about it. So I really don't know the guy, but yeah, really, certainly lately with what he's done with the Chris Kyle thing has really, you know, turned me off.
I don't speak to anyone who it didn't turn off.
Yeah.
It's turned off everyone that I know. And, you know, something, why are you even having them on? Why? Because I think there are people who want to hear it. And I think it's worth doing or talking to them, just like talking to Tim Lammers.
Well, thank you, council member.
Well, thank you, Tim. Syndicated movie journalist Tim Lammers catches reviews, Care at 11, News at 11 on Fridays. He's on the Tom Bernard Show digital radio on Mondays. He's on KQ quite often, more often than me. Also catches reviews on DirectConversations.com. Tim, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Bob. We'll talk next week.
All right, take care. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back with CJ Nitkowski from CBS Sports Radio, former major league pitcher. He's always got something good to say, and you're going to hear from him in a moment.
Now back to the Bob Sansevier Show, Sports Radio 105, The Ticket.
We're joined by former pitcher and CBS Sports Radio analyst CJ Nitkowski. CJ, thanks for taking the time with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Now, CJ, why don't we go right to the chase? The Twins are going to be playing it next Monday. They start off in Detroit. They've had, you know, 400 lost seasons. What do you see for them? Do you see a change in management with Paul Molitor? Things will get better?
I don't know if what was going on with management was even an issue, to be honest with you. I know Gardenhire was there for a long time and did a really nice job, but, you know, it seems like obviously they wanted to get a new voice in there. And, at least from what I'm hearing, Paul Molitor has been really well received, by players. And it's always nice when you get a former player in there, even though he's been retired for a while. I think it helps to some degree, but ultimately, your manager does not matter as much, if the roster is a team that you look at and say, can this team really win? You can only do so much. I mean, I put a manager, I give him maybe a handful of games that he can win or lose for your team when it's all said and done, as long as he has the basic manager skills, which of course any manager at the major league level does. The big test for him, I think, is actually going to be running his bullpen. I say this all the time about managers. That's one of the skill sets that probably one of the most difficult, until you actually get out there and do it and try to get the most out of your guys. Buck Showalter and Joe Girardi are known as some of the best in that regard, but that'll probably be one of the bigger challenges. But I don't think they're going to lose 100, but I don't see them as a competitor right now. Some good young players that are now kind of breaking through in Santana and Vargas, and some reasons to get excited about the direction that the team is headed in. But it's a good division. Maybe one of the best in baseball right now, as the White Sox have gotten better, and the Indians as well. And of course the Royals and Tigers. So it's going to be a tough road, but certainly some optimism, I think, in Minnesota right now.
And we're talking again to CJ Nitkowski, a former pitcher, CBS Sports radio analyst. CJ, what do you make of Joe Mauer? I mean, because he's been a terrific player, but last year he has moved to first base. There always seems to be injuries, and I think being moved to first might have weighed on him so much it affected what he could do at the plate.
Maybe. I mean, I think I look at that as probably the smarter move as he's getting older and you think about the legs and the wear and tear. I mean, I like the idea of taking a guy who can hit and moving him over to first base. I think Buster Posey at some point for the San Francisco Giants, which should probably end up there and maybe around the same age as Joe Mauer. You know, it wasn't a great year, but it wasn't a terrible year either. I mean, the home runs, they are what they are. I mean, they're not going to be there. The 28 home runs in 2009 was somewhat of an aberration for Joe Mauer. I mean, he had that great MVP season, but that's really not who he is. But hopefully he's not four home runs either, to be honest with you. I think the reality of the situation is you'd like to see something close to a dozen home runs, at least double digits for him. I think that's probably still there, but I don't correlate the move to first base necessarily as much of an issue for him. I don't think he changed his approach. I mean, he's pretty steady mentally across the board. It was still a really good year, but we've been so spoiled by some of the fantastic years that he's had that we almost look at, you know, 277 and a 361 on base as somewhat of a down year for him. But the slugging definitely has to come up. That's pretty important when you're talking about a guy who's eating up a big chunk of your payroll and you got him signed through 2018, making some good money over these next 4 years at $23 million. That slugging percentage needs to come up.
Hey, CJ, let me ask you, because you, in your career, you played with eight different teams. Do you follow any of those eight more closely than the others? Because I think you were the longest with the Tigers, and that was, what, three? The Tigers, you were with them twice. So you spent a total of 5 years with them.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I grew up a Yankee fan, but I always tell people the first time you roll into Yankee Stadium and get your butt kicked, you're not a Yankee fan anymore. And so that's kind of how it went down for me. Not necessarily, you know, because I have to cover the game nationally, I try to, you know, make sure I get in as much as I can on all 30 teams. It is a little bit tougher to dig in. When I'm calling games on the weekends for Fox and I know I have a matchup coming up, then I'll really start to dig in a little bit deeper and look for some stories and things to maybe talk about that are just beyond surface level. But you try to get a general knowledge of all 30 teams, so there's not one necessarily either based on, you know, where I played that I dig in more than others. I mean, there's always teams that are going to be national stories. The Yankees are always going to be talked about. The Red Sox are always going to be talked about. The Dodgers are always going to be talked about. And so it's important to make sure you have a really good idea of what's going on, and maybe you can dig a little bit deeper there. But for me and what I'm doing now with Fox and CBS Sports Radio, I got to make sure that I got at least hopefully some decent knowledge of each team.
I'm talking again to CJ Nitkowski, former pitcher, CBS Sports Radio analyst, and as he mentioned, he does stuff for Fox Sports also. Now, you played for the Mets and the Yankees. Is it a whole other world and a tougher world to be with the Yankees because the focus always seems to be on them than with the Mets?
It is a little bit different. I mean, I will tell people all the time that, you know, I wore the Yankee pinstripes for just a couple of months, but for me that was kind of a dream come true because I, you know, grew up watching games in Yankee Stadium and grew up in the suburbs. People look at you differently. Fans, I always felt like, looked at you differently when you wore that uniform compared to the other seven that I wore at the Major League level and a bunch that I wore overseas. It's definitely different. Pressure-wise, it didn't bother me one way or another. I didn't do very well there, but it wasn't, had nothing to do with pressure for me. I think everyone kind of interprets that a little bit differently. Pressure for me is basically what you put on yourself and what you allow in. And just because fans yell more and the media is a little bit more critical of you and sometimes will even take it a little bit further than you think is fair, it's really a matter of what you let in as far as pressure goes. So for me, that was it was a non-issue. For some guys, it will bother them. Some guys hate playing in New York. I mean, there's no getting around it. I was shocked to find out that there were teammates that even hated going there as visitors. I was like, oh, it's such a fun city even to come in for 3 days. But they're like, nah, I can't wait to get out of here. So it's not for everybody. I certainly enjoyed it and feel very blessed to have spent some time with both of those teams.
Now, CJ, I got to ask you. I grew up with the Jersey Shore. You went to Don Bosco Prep in Ramsey. At the Jersey Shore, when state playoffs came around, Don Bosco would seem to be in it, and we always looked at them as being highbrow and hoity-toity. Did we have a bad misconception about Don Bosco Prep?
I don't know. So I was there. I graduated in 91, so I don't know what era you were there. But
it was earlier.
Okay, so when I was there, I will tell you, I mean, I came from a blue-collar family. My father was in the Navy. My mother was a secretary, and how they afforded to send me there, and I think tuition at the time was about $3,000. I'm not sure how they figured that out, to be quite honest with you. But I can tell you that the way Don Bosco was kind of split up when I was there, it was the New York kids were the blue-collar families, and kind of the northern Jersey kids were the rich kids. And there's value to going to a school like that, and tell people that all the time, because I didn't have a car in high school. I'd, you know, take the bus or got a ride from a buddy, and you pull up, and there's kids, you know, with really sweet trucks and BMWs and Mercedes, and you're thinking, all right, you know, this is something to shoot for. So I understand what you're saying. I was not necessarily part of that group, but I get why the perception might have been there.
Now, and again, we're talking not quite two decades earlier, but it was, I went to school in the high school in the 70s, and they did have some pretty damn good teams. I'm sure they did when you were there, too.
Yeah, we won a state championship in 1989 on the baseball side. They won one, football one in 91. But since I've left there, that football program has really taken off and gotten a ton of national recognition. It's a completely different place now. It's almost like a small university.
And, TJ, before we let you go, give me your surprise team. Kansas City seemed to be it last year. Who do you think will be the surprise team this year? Not our Twins, I'm guessing.
Now, unfortunately, probably not the Twins, and I don't know how people will, you know, label surprises, but I really like what the Chicago White Sox did this offseason, and I think if Carlos Rodon, who was their draft pick last year, gets into that rotation by May or June, they may have a chance to surprise the Tigers, but I think they're at least a wild card team like adding Melky Cabrera, Adam LaRoche, David Robertson, Zach Dukes. I don't know if all those offseason acquisitions and Jeff Samardzija make them necessarily a surprise team, but they were nowhere near the postseason a year ago and haven't been for a while. And so for me, I think that's a team that we see playing in October for the first time in a long time.
CJ, I want to say thanks so much. I appreciate you talking about the Twins, setting the record straight about Don Bosco prep. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Good talking to you guys.
All right, CJ Dukowski, former pitcher in CBS Sports Radio, baseball analyst. We'll be right back.